Jaya Prabhupada, Jaya Srila Prabhupada. जय गुरुदेव जय श्रील गुरुदेव A bit nervous, my first class here in Alachua. I'm used to giving classes to devotees younger than me and so on, but never in an assembly of devotees who are, most of you are qualified to be my own spiritual master. So I really seek all of your blessings and your permission to say something of value here, that I can speak something that will inspire and please the hearts of the Vaishnavas. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
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 Namaskritya naram chaiva narottamam devim sarasvatim vyasam tato jayam udhire nashtaprayesha bhadreshu nityam bhagavata sevaya bhagavati uttama shloke bhakti bhavati naishtuki omajnana timirandasya jnananjana shalakaya chakshurum militam yena tasmai shri gurave namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kada Mahyam Dadati Swapadantikam Vansha Kalpatarupyascha Kripa Sindhubhya Evacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaha Jaya Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Rama Rama Rama, Hare Hare. It's especially hard for the first class being a Chatushloki verse. It's the grand finale of the four verses after eight speakers have already spoken on this verse. So I really need your blessings to say something of value here. Etava deva jignyasam
Etava deva jignyasam
Tatva jignyasunatmanaha
Tatva jignyasunatmanaha
Anvaya vyatirekabhyam
Anvaya vyatirekabhyam
Yatsyat sarvatra sarvada
Yatsyat sarvatra sarvada
Etava deva jignyasam
Etava deva jignyasam
Tatva jignyasunatmanaha
Tatva jignyasunatmanaha
Anvaya vyatirekabhyam Yatsyat sarvatra sarvada Etava deva jignyasyam Tatva jignyasunatmanaha Anvaya vyatirekabhyam Yatsyat sarvatra sarvada Please chant. Etava deva jignyasam Tatva jignyasunatmanaha Anvaya vyatirekabhyam Yatsyat sarvatra sarvada Etava deva jignyasam Tatva jignyasunatmanaha Anvaya vyatirekabhyam Yatsyat sarvatra sarada. Ekavadeva jignasyam tatva jignasunatmanah anvaya vratirekavyam yat syat sarvatra sarvada etavad up to this eva certainly. Jignasyam is to be inquired. Tatva, the absolute truth. Jignasana, by the student. Atmanaha, of the self. Anvaya, directly. Vyatirekabhyam, indirectly. Yat, whatever. Syat, it may be, sarvatra, in all space and time, sarvada, in all circumstances. Translation by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. Jai. A person who is searching after the Supreme Absolute Truth, the Personality of Godhead, must certainly search for it up to this, in all circumstances, in all space and time, both directly and indirectly. So we're so fortunate actually to be hearing what Brahma directly heard from the Lord, although our qualification is so small. Somehow we're hearing by the mercy of Lord Chaitanya and our Guru Parampara and Srila Prabhupada, although these messages are extremely confidential. Prabhupada actually ends the purport with a verse from Katha Upanishad. We'll read that. Nayamatma pravachanena labhya namedayana bahuna shruthena yam evaisha vrinute tena labhyas tasyaisha atma vrinute tanum syam. So Prabhupada doesn't give the direct translation there, but the meaning of this verse is that the Supreme Lord is not obtained by any expert explanations or by intelligence or by a lot of hearing. He's actually obtained by he whom he chooses, by whom he himself chooses. So to such a person, actually, he manifests his own form. So somehow we've become fortunate, we've been chosen by Krishna and Lord Chaitanya and Srila Prabhupada and our Guru Mahajanas. But how did Brahma come to hear these confidential verses we've been hearing? So you all know the story a little bit, but I want to go into it a little bit more. Because actually there's nothing mechanical about bhakti at all. It all began when Brahma was born. Brahma did his austerities. He couldn't trace the source of the lotus, and he didn't know how to actually create, although he had the creative impetus. And then he heard the words tapa, tapa. And although he wasn't able to find the speaker, he thought it wise to follow the instruction and actually engage in this penance. This was his pranipat, pranipatena, his submission to this voice, this instruction that he heard. And he underwent penances for how long? For 1,000 celestial years. And that's very significant, right? I mean, you submit to an instruction, and he's feeling very humble, but he's submitting to it for 1,000 celestial years. Part of submission and humility is really this kind of patience that Brahma had. And then later, what happens, Krishna becomes pleased, and he manifests the Vaikuntha. Then he comes and shakes his hand, and he starts speaking, and he asks Brahma, you know, you can ask for any benediction you want. And then he says that, but of course, the ultimate benediction of all penances is actually to see me. And then he also reveals to Brahma that it was he who said tapa tapa. He reveals his identity. And Brahma says, well, you know, you're the super soul. You know everyone's desires. You know all the endeavors that everyone is making. But still, I have some questions. So then Brahma asks four questions. So he asks, what are your material and spiritual forms? Right? Then he asks, what are your various energies, your spiritual and material energies? How are they working? And then he asks, what are your activities in relation to these material and spiritual energies? And then, you know, Krishna is actually pleased right now with Brahma and he's manifested. But then he's asking this final question that he doesn't want to become proud. He doesn't want to become bound again. He knows he'll get instructions for creation now. And part of creation means that it's an act in the mode of passion. So mode of passion means you become the karta, the doer. So he wants to stay protected from it. So Brahma is asking the fourth question, please give me your mercy and your guidance so that I can actually do this service without pride and bondage. So Krishna speaks seven verses to respond to these questions of Brahma. I mean, of course, in one sense, the whole 18,000 verses of Bhagavatam is simply an expansion of these Chatushloki verses. But he speaks two verses as a prelude, the four Chatushloki verses, and then one verse where he says how to actually apply these instructions. So in the very first verse, Krishna is telling Brahma what he's going to gain from these four shlokas that he will speak. He says, you will understand jnana, the most secret knowledge about his form. Then vijnana, you'll also have realization of this form. And sarahasyam, which is that you will get realization about prema bhakti, which is actually the most confidential part. You'll gain that also. And then tadangam, which is basically how you will get to prema bhakti, which is sadhana bhakti. So this is what Brahma says in text 31. And then in the very next verse, then he gives his full mercy. And he says, by my mercy, you will attain perfect realization of my form, you know, my dimensions, my intentions, my qualities, my pastimes, in every form that I take. He's just, you know, giving the full mercy to Brahma. And why is he giving this full mercy? You know, in the first canto, the sages are speaking, and Shaunaka speaks a principle there in the eighth verse of the first canto. He says, Vettatvam samyatat sarvam tatvatas tat anugrahat bruyushnikdasya shishyasya guravo guhyam apiyuta. So he's saying that because you were, Shaunaka is speaking to Suta Goswami, and he's saying that because you were submissive, your spiritual masters have endowed you with all favors. And Prabhupada translates Nikdasya as submissive in that verse, but our acharyas also comment that Snigdasya particularly means having this affectionate regard, affectionate submission. So Brahma had this affectionate submission, and therefore the spiritual master, in this case Krishna, revealed everything to him. Because these truths, again, they cannot be known by any amount of education or reading scriptures or anything, because dharmasya tattvam nihitam guhayam mahajano yena gatasa panta. These truths are locked in the hearts of great devotees, so they can only be known when they're revealed. And so in Brahma's case, Krishna spoke because dharmam tasaksha bhagavat pranitam. And similarly, we see so many examples. Whole Bhagavatam is full of these examples. Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he revealed everything to Rupa Goswami. Sri Chaitanya Manobhishtam, we chant every day, right? And Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami in Chaitanya Charitamrita, he actually compares Rupa Goswami to Brahma by quoting this Tene Brahma Hridaya Adi Kavaye verse. And he says that he will, Rupa Goswami is like the Adi Kavaye. He's the original poet to whom everything will be revealed by Lord Chaitanya. And by his realization, even the great demigods will actually become bewildered. So we can see how Lord Chaitanya revealed everything to Rupa Goswami, like in, during Jagannath Rath Yatra. Lord Chaitanya was dancing ecstatically, you know, and the whole atmosphere was surcharged, it was ecstatic. And Lord Chaitanya is just exploding with emotions. And he chants a verse which, you know, sounds like a mundane love song, actually. But, you know, nobody understood the meaning of it. But Rupa Goswami understood the meaning of it. He later composes a companion verse to it. And he puts it on the roof, thatched roof. And Lord Chaitanya comes and he reads this verse and he thinks, how did Rupa Goswami actually understand this? You know, what he kind of slaps him even. How did you understand this? And then he asks Swarup Damodar Goswami. And Swarup Damodar Goswami says, well, you must have revealed your heart to him because there's no other way he could understood this. And similarly, our Srila Prabhupada, right, he understood the heart of Bhaktisiddhanta. He wrote this famous absolute is sentient, thou hast proved impersonal calamity, thou hast moved. So when Bhaktisiddhanta read this, he understood that Srila Prabhupada understood his heart, and he actually ordered that you should print anything that Srila Prabhupada writes. And similarly, Bhaktisiddhanta understood the heart of Gaurakishore Das Babaji, right? Gaurakishore Das Babaji gave Bhaktisiddhanta three instructions, that you should never make disciples, never associate with materialists, and never go to Calcutta. And Bhaktisiddhanta, you know, he says, I followed everything perfectly because, you know, all these disciples, I don't consider them to be my disciples. I actually think that they're my instructing gurus. And I never associated with materialists, because I never took anything from them, because association means you're taking something. I never took anything from anyone. And then he never went to Calcutta because he was always in Bagh Bazar, which is all identical to Vaikuntha. So he said he followed all the instructions perfectly. So anyway, examples and examples, Maharaj Parikshit and Sukadev Goswami and Maitreya and Vidura and so on. So this is how everything was revealed to Brahma, that he somehow touched the heart of Krishna and all the knowledge was imparted to him. And then Krishna then spoke the Chaturshloki verses. So in response to his first question, what are the material and spiritual forms, Krishna points to his chest and he says, you know, I existed before the creation and I'm there, you know, during the entire creation and at the end. Also after annihilation, I am there. And that means also, of course, that Krishna was there along with his associates and his dham. And then the working of the different energies. Then Brahma got this realization about how nothing is separate, actually, from Krishna's energies. And Krishna says that if you think that anything is separate, and if you think that anything has value separately from me, then know that to be Maya. And then the activities of what are Lord's activities in relation to the material and spiritual energies? And Krishna says, very mysteriously, he says that just as the elements enter into all, you know, the beings and yet remain separate, I also enter into everything. So it's very mysterious. This is supposed to be the rahasya, right? So in the pastimes related to the material world, he remains completely detached, just as detached as the material elements, because material elements are just jada vastu, you know, they're dull, they're inert. And in pastimes related to pure devotees, he actually becomes attached. So Bhagavatam is speaking very indirectly, Krishna is speaking very indirectly, because Krishna likes that kind of speech. He says that later to Uddhava in the 11th canto. So, Jiva Goswami also says that this verse actually means that I am manifest to my devotees inside. That means in the activity of their minds. And outside, he's manifest in the activity of their senses. And for whom he manifests like this? For those who have this rahasya. And what is this rahasya? This rahasya is prema bhakti. So then, So these verses are also describing the Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, right? So far, the first two verses describe the Sambandha, and the next verse describe the Prayojana. And to the extent that one understands the relation of everything with Krishna, actually to that extent one engages in devotional service and one will ultimately come to Prema Bhakti, which is our Prayojana. So now to today's verse, that was just a little background, tying everything up together because it's our last day of Chatushloki verses. So now this verse 36 is describing the process or Abhideya. So basically the verse is saying the person who's searching after the absolute truth, the conclusion of that search, even if he's looking for something else, or even if he's looking for something wrong thing, you know, the perfection of that search should actually end in Krishna. He should continue that search up to the point that he comes to this level of prema bhakti. So that's what is being said, because people usually are looking for sense gratification. But even that sense gratification, if one goes really deep, deep, deep and searches for it, one can actually reach Krishna, because one will understand that my senses will only be fully satisfied when I'm actually pleasing Krishna. Or, you know, little children, they're looking for their parents, they're looking for their mommy, you know. And so what are they looking for in their mommy? They're looking for love, they're looking for shelter. And so one, if they pursue this, you know, love and shelter, look, searching for that love and shelter, they'll come to the understanding that the ultimate mother and father, ultimate love and shelter can only be found in Krishna. So we may be searching indirectly for Krishna right now. Then the goal will become manifest in a very hard way, and in a very, it'll take a very, very long time. So Krishna is telling us, go directly, right? So, and then he says, how should we inquire? Anvayad and Vyatireka, directly and indirectly. And where? Sarvatra Sarvada, where and how? So everyone can do the search, and at all places, at all times, in all stages of life, right? So everyone at all times should actually be focused on this goal of prema bhakti. In fact, this is also the definition of sadhana bhakti. We're all sadhakas, right? Kriti sadhya bhavet sadhya bhavasa sadhana bidak nitya siddhasya bhavasya prakatyam hridi sadhyata. That, you know, we are engaging our mind and senses, but what is the goal while engaging the mind and senses is to fix our mind on the goal, that is bhava bhakti. So Prabhupada actually in the purport, he goes, you know, line by line, and he describes many things, and many devotees have spoken so far. So I'm not going to go into, of course, obviously the rest of the purport, but the section that I was supposed to read today is the last section. We'll discuss that. So here, Prabhupada says, through further quotations, Srila Prabhupada demonstrates that Shastra also indirectly, Vyatireka, indicates that everyone should take to Bhakti Yoga. So this, so many ways Prabhupada already spoke about Anvaya, right? Anvaya means directly, how Bhakti very directly accomplish, by Bhakti you can accomplish everything, and it's applicable at all times in all places. So I was talking to a couple devotees and they still had some doubt about this directly, indirectly. So I thought I would just say a couple words, and that will also help us understand today's section. So one aspect we already heard, directly searching for absolute truth, and indirectly means also that doing something else, searching for something else, but through that ultimately coming to the absolute truth. So that's one meaning of directly, indirectly. The other meaning is that one must directly execute the process of devotional service and indirectly avoid the impediments to progress. This is what Bhaktivinoda Thakur also speaks in Bhajan Rahasya. He says there's two ways to become free from anarthas. So one is by following the rules directly, and the other is by following the restrictions. Then Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, he gives another meaning of directly and indirectly, and that is that he says that path which will actually give positive results when practiced, that's anvayad. And when you don't perform that practice, then you don't get any results. That's vyatireka. So in that way, you can conclude whether this is the path or not. When you're not practicing that path, you don't get the results. When you're practicing, you get positive results. And the other anvaya that Prabhupada talks about in the purport is about approaching through the guru. That is actually anvaya, very direct path. And Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also speaks about how this indicates rasa, about how among all things to be known, one should actually desire the highest realization of rasa, which is tasted in the different dasya, sakya, vatsalya, and so on. And how is it tasted? By direct contact. Direct contact is anvaya, so that is the meeting that happens between Krishna and the devotees. And then separation. Separation is vyatireka, so when they're separated, that's also a rasa. And that can be experienced in all places, in all universes, in places like Vrindavan, in the presence of servants, elders, friends, gopis, at all times, continually, even after dissolution of the universe. Right? So applicable at all times. So I thought I'll just go through one verse as an example of just to understand this anvaya vyatireka better, because the section for today is actually describing this vyatireka. So we know this nice verse, tyaktva sadharma charanam bhujam harer bhajan apakvot tate patot yadi, in the first canto. So it says that if someone gives up his occupational duties and works in Krishna consciousness, and then falls down on account of not completing his work, what loss is there on his part? And what can one gain if one performs his material activities perfectly? So what is the goal? So it's talking about Varnashram. Varnashram was described as one of the indirect ways, right? So what's the goal of Varnashram usually? It's some kind of karmakanda or swarga or something like that. So if they give up the practice of Varnashram and practice bhakti, then actually there's no loss. So the non-performance of Varnashram, one can still get the same result of swarga. So Varnashram is actually ruled out as anvaya here, right? So bhakti passes the anvaya criteria, because anvaya means if you perform, you will get positive results. And if Varnashram is performed perfectly, then what is gained? Actually, nothing much, right? So it fails the vyatireka, principle also. So the non-presence of bhakti is not giving results. So this is vyatireka. Maybe just a simple example further to illustrate this. Just like if somebody wants to figure out how is the sweet taste coming in sweet rice. You know, there's two ways he can do it. One is anvayad. Anvayad means that he individually tastes each ingredient. You know, he'll taste the rice, he'll taste the milk, he'll taste the dry fruits, he'll taste the ghee, and then he'll taste the sugar and think, yeah, this is coming from the sugar. The sweet taste is coming from the sugar. So this is anvayad. And vyatireka means that you start removing one ingredient. So maybe he cooks rice, sweet rice without rice. And then he thinks, oh, this is not due to the rice. Sweet taste is not coming from the rice. And then, you know, he just one by one, he'll remove each element, and then he thinks, okay, this is not the cause of sweetness, this is not the cause of sweetness. And finally he figures out that, you know, actually sweetness is coming from sugar. So in that way, so if you remove Varnashram and add bhakti, the same result is obtained. So Varnashram is not the cause of the result. So there's also a nice verse in the 11th canto which actually supports this vyatireka about principle about Varnashram. It's in the 5th chapter. says, each of the four social orders headed by the brahmanas was born through different combination of the modes of nature, from the face, arms, thighs, and feet of the Supreme Lord, in his universal form, along with the ashramas. If any of the members of the four varnas and four ashramas fail to worship or disrespect the Lord, who is the source of their own creation, they will fall down from their ashram. So that's quite clear, right? So, now we're reading today's section of the purport. Similarly, Prabhupada saying, similarly, as indicated indirectly in various places in revealed scriptures, even though one is well-versed in all the Vedas and scriptures, if one is not a devotee of the Supreme Lord, the personality of Godhead, he's considered to be the lowest of mankind. So this is a quote from Garuda Purana. And I think now it becomes very clear why this is, Prabhupada is giving this example of this verse to illustrate the Vyatireka principle. Then, in the next verse, actually there's a nice verse in the 11th canto in this connection also, which says that even if you're running with both eyes closed, a devotee on this path will never fall, right? So what are these two eyes? These two eyes are actually the Shruti and Smriti. And even if you don't know all of Shruti and Smriti, but if you're perfectly devoted to the Lord, actually there is no loss at all, right? So that's what Prabhupada is saying here, that this is a verse from Garuda Purana, that even if one is well-versed in all the scriptures, but if you're not a devotee, then you're lowest of mankind. Then the next verse that Prabhupada is quoting, he's saying, in the Garuda Purana, Brihan Naradiya Purana, and Padma Purana, the same is repeated. What is the use of Vedic knowledge and penances for one who is devoid of devotional service to the Lord? So there's no point. What is the comparison of thousands of Prajapatis to one devotee of the Lord? Sukadeva Goswami said in 2.4.17 of Bhagavatam that neither the ascetic, nor one who is greatly munificent, nor one who is famous, nor the great philosopher, nor the great occultist, nor anyone else can achieve the desired result without being engaged in the service of the Lord. So again, so many examples illustrating this Vyatireka principle. Then he says, even if a place is more glorious than heaven, if there's no glorification of the Lord of Vaikuntha or his pure devotee, it should at once be quitted. So this is a verse that's spoken by the demigods in the chapter on description of the island of Jambudvip in the 5th canto. They say that even if Brahmaloka actually shouldn't be accepted as the residence, if you know there are no sweet topics about the Lord being spoken there, and if there are no devotees there who are taking shelter of the Lord, if there are no great festivals or there's no sacrifices and chanting of the holy name of the Lord there. Then Prabhupada says, the pure devotee refuses to accept all the five different types of liberation in order to be engaged in the service of the Lord. So this is a verse that Kapila Deva is speaking to Devahuti, that even the five types of liberation, even if you were to gain that, you know, there's no point actually. So Vyatireka principle. Then, the final conclusion therefore is that the glories of the Lord must be always and everywhere proclaimed. One should hear about his glories, one should chant about his glories, and one should always remember his glories, because that is the highest perfectional stage of life. So Prabhupada is paraphrasing a verse from the second canto, in the second chapter, 36th verse here. Tasmat sarvatmana rajan hari sarvatra sarvada shrotavya kirtitavyascha smartavya bhagavan vinam. So basically all the conditions are covered, and we're coming to the conclusion that the best and guaranteed path of progress is actually engagement in bhakti. Then in the next part of the purport, Prabhupada is touching again on sarvatra sarvada. from the verse. Because already bhakti has been spoken, how it is applicable to everyone in all places at all times. But now he's going to show how the other paths are not sarvatra sarvada. So he's saying, as far as fruitive work is concerned, it is limited to an enjoyable body, right? Because one must perform karma. First of all, there's requirements of a pure place and all that to perform some karma kanda, karma yoga rituals. And also this karma is only practiced until one is detached, you know, from that enjoyment, or until the end of the body. So therefore, it's not sarvatra sarvada, right? Then as far as yoga is concerned, it's limited to the acquirement of mystic power. So again, yoga. Yoga also needs a proper place. We learn in the sixth chapter of Bhagavad Gita, you need to find a proper place, sit straight, have a mat, you know, focus this way. You must have a pure mind and so on. And also yoga is also practiced until one attains these different siddhis, and then one may give it up then. So it's limited to the acquirement of mystic power. Then as far as empiric philosophy is concerned, it's limited to the attainment of transcendental knowledge. And as far as transcendental knowledge is concerned, it's limited to attainment of salvation. So again, to practice jnana, we require a pure mind. And jnana is also performed only until maybe, you know, one gets liberation. It's not something that's practiced at all times. So then, even if they're adopted, there's every chance of discrepancies in discharging the particular type of functions. But adoption of the transcendental devotional service of the Lord has no limit, nor is there fear of falling down. The process automatically reaches the final stage by the grace of the Lord. In the preliminary stage of devotional service, there is an apparent requisite for knowledge. But in the higher stage, there is no necessity of such knowledge. The best and guaranteed path of progress is therefore engagement in bhakti yoga or pure devotional service. So Prabhupada is also talking about here, it seems like when you're practicing bhakti, in the preliminary stages you may require some knowledge, but later it's not required. Rupa Goswami talks about this in the Bhakti Rasamrita Sindhu also. He says that initially you may require some knowledge to just kind of get a foothold in bhakti. He uses that language, foothold in bhakti. But later you don't require it. But is this really jnana? It's not jnana. You know, some knowledge, whatever knowledge it is, it's only considered jnana when the goal of that knowledge is liberation. But if the goal of that knowledge is bhakti, then that doesn't remain jnana. It actually becomes bhakti, because the intention of that knowledge, even when we are learning that the, you know, we're not the body, we're the soul and so on, it seems like jnana, but the intention of that is bhakti. So it turns into bhakti. So it's not really jnana, because knowledge which is spoken only with the intention of liberation, that's what is really jnana. So bhakti can be practiced at all times, so it's been completely established. Bhakti is the only thing that qualifies all these requirements, anvaya, vyatireka, and sarvatra and sarvada, at all times, right? You know the story of Gopal Guru, how in Gambira, where Mahaprabhu stayed, there were deities of Radhakanta. And the name of the pujari there was Gopal, and they lived in the same house. And one day Mahaprabhu went to the, was going to the bathroom, and he was holding his tongue. And Gopal says, Mahaprabhu, why are you holding your tongue? He says, well, my tongue can't stop chanting the holy name. That's why I'm holding my tongue. And Gopal says, well, what's wrong with it? You know, you can chant the holy name anywhere. It's not anything wrong. So then Lord Chaitanya says, yeah, that's right, you're my guru. And from that day he gets the name Gopal Guru Goswami. So there's absolutely no criteria. Anywhere, including bathroom, you can chant the holy name. And One just needs to be a human being, rimatram. Even savai pumsam parodharma. Pumsam is referring to just being a human being. That's the only qualification, and we can practice bhakti. And then the last part of purport, how can there be a long purport without talk of impersonalists? So Prabhupada is talking about impersonalists here. The cream of Srimad Bhagavatam in the foregoing four shlokas is sometimes squeezed out by the impersonalists for different interpretations in their favor. But it should be carefully noted that the four shlokas were first spoken by the personality of Godhead himself, and thus the impersonalist has no scope for entering into them because he has no conception of the personality of Godhead. Therefore, the impersonalist may squeeze out any interpretations from them, but such interpretations will never be accepted by those who are taught in the disciplic succession from Brahma, as will be cleared up in the following verses. Besides that, the Shruti confirms that the Supreme Truth, Absolute Personality of Godhead, never reveals himself to anyone who's falsely proud of his academic knowledge. The Shruti Mantra clearly says, Katha Upanishad 1.2.23, Nayam Atma Pravachanena Labhyo Name Dhaya Na Brahuna Shrutena Yam Evaisha Vrinute Tena Labhyas Tasyaisha Atma Vivrinute Tanum Swam. The whole matter is explained by the Lord himself, and one who has no approach to the Lord in his personal feature can rarely understand the purport of Srimad Bhagavatam without being taught by the Bhagavatas in the disciplic succession. So that's the end of the Chatushloki. And in the next verse, then, Krishna will tell Arjuna, now you should follow these instructions in detail with full concentration, and then you'll never be bewildered at any time in any of the kalpas, your whole lifetime and all its subdivisions. You'll never be bewildered. So the practice of bhakti, the mere practice of bhakti doesn't guarantee that we will not get bewildered, but one has to actually be very serious and determined and give full attention to all the details. And that's what we're learning from Brahma over here. So I'll end with that. And please correct me, add anything you'd like, and comment. Hare Krishna.
It was very nice class. Your first class was very nice. Thank you for presenting with the nice conclusion. I appreciate your explanation on the jnana, because this is one of the confusing word, I would say. It's simple, very everybody knows jnana means knowledge. But if you look at Chaitanya Charitamrita, Mahaprabhu says, Aisharja jnanete sakala jagata mishrita aisharja sitila preme nahi morprita. Their whole world has a Hawaiian reverence, knowing full knowledge of God. It does not, it's feeble, me. Bhakti, pure bhakti is not attained by that. But then we see Bhagavatam says, Vasudeva Bhagavati Bhakti Yoga Prayajate Janati Asu Vairagyam Gyanam Chajat. So if somebody is doing bhakti, means gyan must be there. If jnana is not rising, that means he's not doing bhakti. It sounds like a contradictory, because that word, but I appreciate you are giving that, no, that word has a different meaning in different places.
Yeah.
And you said that if it is promoting bhakti, it's bringing you to bhakti, that jnana actually is part of bhakti. Because Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur gives a breakdown on this. He said, tat padartha jnana, knowledge about Krishna, his omnipotency, omniscience, all this is beginning because God is great, and remembering greatness will bring submission. We need it. But God is also sweet, and focusing on that sweet will evoke affection, and that is also needed. But there is a Bhakti Siddhanta Sutta says that that greatness, awe and reverence aspect should be focused first. Otherwise, sahajiyasam will be there. And then if somebody don't hear the sweetness, only focus on the gyan, is the hard-hearted impersonalism is still there.
Right.
So I appreciate you break it down and in a very simple way you explain about the importance of gyan and
Thank
how
you.
To understand it.
Thank you for those comments and for elaborating on it further. Thank you, Hare Krishna.
One of the last verses in the Bhagavatam, glorifying the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam Puranam Malam Vaishnavanam, and in the last line,
yeah.
or second to last, it says, Tatra Jnana Viraga Bhakti Sahitam.
Hmm.
That not only bhakti is given here, but Jnana is given here, and Vairagya, but automatically you're getting that. So right at the end again, it comes in, boom.
Thank you for that.
I have a question on the sweet rice example. Is that your own idea or you got it from? Just curious. It's a very nice example, direct and indirect.
I heard many years ago, I heard from someone. Uh-huh. I can't even remember. I have to think where I heard it from.
No, that's a very nice example. I yeah.
If you eliminate, you give a two way to look at it. You say, cook each item without, absence of one.
Hmm.
So I don't know, in sweet rice, what do you mean? Water, rice, sugar.
Water. Preferably no water.
Milk.
No water.
No water.
No water.
Rice, milk, sugar, dry fruits.
I'm sorry, I'm not a cook, so you can see.
So that's a very nice though, direct, indirect.
Yeah.
It's very interesting. I never did it, but did you cook like that or just came up with that?
No, I didn't cook like that.
She tried cooking
I tried cooking sweet rice without rice.
Mother Sugar.
Thank you so much for a wonderful class. I was appreciating how you kind of focused in on patience and how Krishna was so pleased with Brahma because he had that quality of patience. It's so often we don't have. I was thinking, I can't remember the personality in Chaitanya Charitamrita. Somehow they displeases Lord Chaitanya, which is, I don't want to see him for whatever it was, a million births.
Yeah.
And then he was so excited, like, oh, I'll get this.
Mukunda.
Who was Mukunda?
Mukunda.
Yeah, yeah. And so when Lord Chaitanya heard that, then he immediately gave him, you know, his darshan. So
yeah,
I appreciate that you really focused in on patience because it's not easily come by.
Yeah, not easy. What it means to really follow an instruction submissively and with humility. Because humility means I don't know and I'm searching. And then you give me an instruction, and then I want it to work right away. There's no submission there. This is like fruta mentality. Okay, you gave me this, now give me what I want. Yeah.
Haribol. Nice class. I like your presentation. I was wondering if you did a lot of study on this, because when Prabhupada, when you read those verses, you referenced where they were and knew the verses.
Yeah.
It was just English.
Yeah.
That was nice. I appreciate
yeah,
it.
Yeah, I actually read, Jiva Goswami quotes these verses in Krama Sandarbha.
Thank
so I actually
you.
Read them.
Very sweet class. Thank you.
Thank you.
The beginning you said something that struck me is that we're very fortunate Krishna has chosen us.
Mm.
And that it was kind of a subtle thing he said, but you know, a lot of time we think, oh, you know, very rarely Krishna takes one back to Godhead. But you're saying Krishna has chosen us, we're all here able to have that opportunity. And it was inspiring to just, we're here in this little, there's a little Vrindavan here in Florida. And just take the, really feel gratitude for what Krishna has here, and kind of
Yeah, it really struck me, you know, when I was reading, like, wow, we're getting, you know, Brahma did austerities for thousand celestial years, and then he heard these four shlokas, but, you know, we're getting to hear not just the four shlokas, but the unzipped version of it, you know, with details and details and details, but how seriously do I take it? I mean, like, who was it? Nandini Kishori the other day was saying, you know, that the other secret, you know, the secret is that Lord Nityananda, because of Lord Nityananda's mercy, we don't need any qualification. We've not done any austerities. I've never searched like this, or we're just like being spoon-fed. Yeah.
Yeah, it seems this quality, this having gratitude. Can you speak about how to increase our gratitude?
Yeah, it's something that I'm trying to develop myself in my life, actually. Such an important quality, and absence of that quality always makes it feel like something is always missing, and I'm always complaining about something and feeling miserable about something. But gratitude means, I mean, we all know what gratitude means. It means that you recognize Krishna's mercy in our life. I often think about how, you know, the description of the three levels of the Bhagavatas, Kanishta, Madhyam, and Uttam. So there's the two words, Kanishta, Madhyam, Uttam, Adhikari, and then Kanishta, Madhyam, Uttam, Bhagavata, right? The Adhikari is the qualification, but Bhagavata means what is their vision, right? So the Kanishta sees Krishna only on the altar, as we know, or in the temple, but he doesn't see the connection of Krishna to anything else. You know, the Madhyam sees in the four ways that we know, and then the Uttam sees that connection everywhere. You know, so if I'm meant to grow and become a Madhyam and an Uttam, then I have to start seeing Krishna's presence in my life, you know, in so many ways. And then if I'm seeing Krishna's presence in my life, then I will feel gratitude. I will feel gratitude, right? Even, what is that verse? 10.14.8 is just not coming to me. Tathenukampam, right, Tathenukampam verse. You know, Prabhupada says this is the guide, you know, for devotees. This is a guiding verse for devotees. And what is that verse also saying? How to see Krishna's mercy in, even in the difficulties of our lives. So how can we become even grateful for the difficulties in our life, or to speak of the good things? You know, I feel like I don't even recognize the all the good things that are happening. What to speak of feeling grateful for the difficulties? Because then, slowly, slowly, my vision can change and I can really see that Krishna connection and everything. Anyway, those were the thoughts that I was inspired by. So much can be said about gratitude.
Yeah, thank you. Something I've done that's been very inspiring sometimes is think of all the times Krishna's protected me. Mm-hmm. A lot of times I don't even realize, like, go back to things and, wow, he actually really protected me there. Not realize we go through events and not see how he was taking care of and protecting. And I'm also hearing from you, it's hearing, and then we have to contemplate. We really have to contemplate how Krishna's working in our life. And then it's like the gratitude is, we can apply that you know, contemplation we've had.
Yeah, thank you. So I think we can end here.
There's one online question.
Oh, okay.
Online asking, what is the verse number that shows the affection for the Lord to reveal to Brahmaji?
It's 118.
And there's another online question from Mother Agapnika. Srila Prabhupada says in the purport that when one adopts devotional service, there is no fear of falling down. We experience ourselves sometimes and others falling down. Can you please give your understanding of this statement?
Well, you're only asking because you just want to hear more about the topic. You already know the answer, Mother Agapnika. I mean, we know in Bhagavad Gita, Neha Bikrama Nasho Asti Pratyavayana Vidyate Svalpamapya Siddharmas Yatrayate Mahato Bayat, that even a little devotional service performed actually protects us from the greatest fear. And there are so many verses. Oh.
Please follow the way.
Hare Krishna. Hare Krishna. This is embarrassing. but I lost my train of thought. Yeah, so in the Bhagavatam also there are so many verses which speak about how even the verse we quoted today, Tyaktva Sadharma Charanam Bhujam Hare Bhajan Apakvo Pate Tatod Yadi, and there's a verse, one verse after that, I can't remember it right now, but that verse also says that even if a devotee falls down externally, you know, his life will actually never come back to where it was before, because after having once tasted the sweetness of relationship with Krishna, one will keep hankering for that continuously. So externally we may fall down from following the practices, we may fall down in our consciousness, but actually the inner bhakti is actually never lost. So we never fall down fully like a materialist. Our life is, yeah, even if we fall down, we don't suffer like a materialist because Krishna's hand is still there. You know, this famous line that Mother Nanda likes to quote, once you're on this path, you know, Krishna will forcibly drag you to success. She likes to quote that so much. But we are dragged to success. So, you know, we may fall down either because we are lax, you know, because of some offenses or something. And some purification will come, some difficulty will come, but through that difficulty, actually, our heart is becoming cleansed and our heart is becoming softer, our heart is becoming humbled. And we will continue at some point, whether several years later or next life or, you know, whenever it is, it's never actually, we're not completely fallen ever. Is that okay? All right, so let's stop here. Granth Rashi Mad Bhagavatam Ki Jai. Thank you all very much. Hare Krishna.